Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Thanks so much for being with us. More United States sanctions will be implemented against Iran on Monday. Now, this is Washington has reneged on its agreement towards the international community regarding sanctions against Iran under the JCPOA. We will take a look at the U.S. sanction regime and how it points to the action of Washington, a regime that seems to be more and more out of touch with international law. Let's now cross over to Brussels and get an update from Press TV's Jerome Hughes about the European reactions to all of this.
That's right. Well, of course, you know, back in 2015, when this deal was struck after many years of negotiations, it was described as a landmark historic agreement. And in a sense, we're now at another historic time, because we've never really seen the European Union stand up to the United States in the way that they are currently trying to do. I mean, the European Union considers the JCPOA to be one of its greatest foreign policy achievements. And so the European Union is determined to try and save the accord. Of course, Iran has been in full compliance with the agreement in terms of the terms of the agreement. That has been verified on many occasions. But now we have a situation where the US has launched an economic war, or is ramping up its economic war on the Islamic Republic. And in a sense, now we're at the moment of truth, because the mechanisms that the EU has been putting in place and continues to put in place, basically we're now going to find out whether or not those mechanisms and the different measures will actually succeed in ensuring that Iran benefits economically as in terms of as part of how it was agreed with the JCPOA. But, you know, so now we don't know. Will these measures be enough in terms of the EU's cooperation with other countries like China and Russia, or will the influence of the United States be too strong? We just have to wait and see now. And I mean, this has opened up another broader debate in terms of the dominance of, for example, the US dollar in terms of trading with the European Union. Mm-hmm. And we've heard the head of the EU Commission, Juncker, and other influential countries like Germany and France saying they would like the euro to become more dominant in terms of trading and so on. So this has actually opened up a much broader debate in terms of sort of the significance and the influence that the euro has in terms of in terms of global trade, etc.
Indeed. Thanks so much for that update, Jerome Hughes, out of Brussels. I'd like to welcome my guest now to the program, former American intelligence linguist and commentator, Scott Ricard out of Tampa, Florida, and editor of Veterans Today, Mike Harris out of Phoenix, Arizona. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start off with what our correspondent was talking about, Mike, and basically saying we're not exactly sure what all of this is going to entail. Now, we look at the Europeans' side of things and how the Europeans at the end of the day are going to react and how Washington really will react towards them. Your take on the European side of the sanction regime?
Well, the U.S. is being very foolish about this, in my opinion. I supported the JCPOA, and I thought it was truly a landmark agreement. And the reason I support it is because of the opening of the Iranian market to Western commerce. Iran is a big market, over 80 million people. There's a lot of product that the West manufactures. The U.S. needs the business. The Europeans need the business. And for Trump and the neocon-infested State Department to come out and kill this deal at the expense of positive business relations is just foolish to me. The way to influence another country is not by pushing them away and becoming adversarial. The way to influence another country is to embrace them and through trade and commerce and cultural exchanges and try to have a positive, proactive effect. And so I am just puzzled by this. And I look at the distortion that the U.S. foreign policy has as a result of our relationship with Israel. And if we would take Israel out of the equation, then the U.S. would be able to make more balanced decisions and have a more balanced policy that would result in a long-term peace within the Middle East and the entire region, actually.
Okay. Well, Scott, your take. Now, Mike said the U.S. could have had a more balanced and proactive effect. if they had relations with Iran, chose to, actually, it's not even about the relations, but not even adhering to an international agreement. What do you think the United States wants? What's the goal here? What do they want to get out of more sanctions against Iran? And we've seen 39 years of sanctions, and of course, the Islamic Republic is still standing strong. So what's the goal this time around?
Well, the goal is very clear. Mike Harris hit the nail on the head. The pro-Israel lobby were the strongest advocates of killing the deal in Washington, D.C. There were over 60 pro-Israel lobby organizations that sponsored a Kill the Bill event on Capitol Hill that Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, Sarah Palin, the Duck Dynasty, just several knuckleheads from the Republican Party attended this event, and it was actually very well attended, unfortunately, by the constituents of Donald Trump, and certainly very well pushed by the pro-Israel lobby supporters, specifically alongside the Republican Party. Now that we have the Republican Party in power, you see a lot of the neocons that were behind the Kill the Bill initiative that are pushing forward fervently and fomenting a negative connotation against Israel alongside Netanyahu. So what we see here is the pro-Israel lobby's effect on the Manchurian candidates that exist in the Senate, the Congress, and now, unfortunately, the White House. So we have a very strong pro-Israel, anti-Iranian sentiment, unfortunately, in this current administration. And we may see a change on Tuesday this week with some of the neocons being replaced. But certainly, when it comes to the White House, we'll probably have to wait another 2.5 years.
Okay. Well, Mike, you heard what Scott has said, and it's really interesting because after years of basically not really having too much communications with each other, and of course we saw with the JCPOA that many, especially in the West, called landmark. So let's look at that deal itself and now what all of this means, because the whole excuse to begin with that brought everyone to the table was dealing with the whole nuclear situation, nuclear proliferation. And of course, Iran always saying about its peaceful nuclear program. And of course, U.S., because of Israel and others, saying otherwise. But what does this mean in the whole scheme of things? One, if we look at other countries and having some type of nuclear program, and two, seeing the United States basically not abide by international agreements?
Well, the U.S. is sort of in a conundrum here because it's well recognized that Israel has a nuclear program. Colin Powell acknowledged this in a memo that he published. And yet the U.S. does not call out Israel for their nuclear program, but yet they want to call out everyone else, whether it's Iran or North Korea or any other aspiring countries. The only reason that a country like Iran or North Korea would need a nuclear program is to keep the 800-pound U.S. military gorilla out of their country. Because if you have nukes, it makes it very, very hard to put troops and to invade your country. So I understand the motivation why Iran would want one. But the U.S. is really on the horns of a dilemma here, because it's well recognized that Israel has this program, and the U.S. is prohibited by being in the Non-Proliferation Treaty to do business with any country that is not a member that has a nuclear program. So the U.S. is really in this one, and this is just a testament to the strength and power of the Israel lobby. And if the U.S. really wants to have an objective foreign policy and really do things in its own best interest, it really needs to divorce itself from this special relationship with Israel. This is much bigger. I mean, the U.S. also has a history of supporting despotic regimes. You look at the support we have for Saudi Arabia, one of the worst human rights records on the planet. But the U.S. didn't have a problem supporting Iran back when the Shah was in power. And he was one of the worst despotic leaders ever. He was reviled by his people, which allowed for the Islamic Revolution. So the U.S. is really has some malfunctioning foreign policy, and it's time, if Trump really wanted to do something that would benefit the United States, he would clean house at the State Department and rethink all of these particular relationships that we have around the world. Some of them need to become more arm's length, and some of them we need to open up. I think the Iranian people are wonderful people. I've had many Iranian friends from back when I was in undergraduate school, when they Iranians were still allowed to travel freely to the country. And it's time to normalize relationships with Iran, with North Korea, with Russia. It's time to bring all these parties to the table.
Okay.
But the U.S. economy is built on a war economy. And without an adversary, without an enemy, without an active war going forward, the military-industrial complex does not make us profit goals. And
well,
so
Scott,
the U.S. needs to retool.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Let me cross back over to Scott, getting back into this conversation. Well, Scott, now, according to Brookings Institution, a well-known American think tank, regarding new sanctions against Iran, it says, quote, there is no way the Trump administration will be able to achieve its 12 stated objective because they're utterly unrealistic. Now, your take on that, and if you agree with them, then how could a government actually then shoot itself in the foot and go actually implement something or cancel something which perhaps they could have benefited from?
Well, I actually, for the first time in a long time, I do agree with the Brookings Institute. The U.S. has shot itself in the foot on this round of sanctions. This is the first time that the U.S. has had, you know, extremely poor support from the European Union and certainly other nations as well when it comes to sanctions. You look at the North Korean sanctions, even the Chinese participated on the North Korean sanctions against the North Koreans. But at this point, I think the world has realized the sickness of the American foreign policy initiatives and the sickness in which the United States has really revealed itself most recently in its relationship with Saudi Arabia and the massacre and the assassination of Jamal Khashoggi. So this is a long relationship the Americans have had with Saudi Arabia. This is an extremely close tie with the military and industrial complex. Saudi Arabia is only about 30 million people, but they buy $56 billion worth of weapons. I mean, that's almost as much as Russia, and it's absolutely one of the top five in the world. So I think what you see here is the fact that the United States economy, as Mike Harris has said, is so interdependent on the military-industrial complex. Even Trump said hundreds of thousands of jobs would be lost if we lost these military deals in Saudi Arabia. So I think the clear indication here is it's the economics, it's the geopolitical influence, and it's the criminal nature of the American operations with countries like Saudi Arabia that are the root cause. And unfortunately, countries like Israel, which by the way, had a delegation in Saudi Arabia this past week, and that delegation was urging the United States and Trump and Saudi Arabia to continue their relationship. So I think we see the bad influences of Israel and the unfortunate dependency on the military-industrial complex and obviously the petroleum industry with Saudi Arabia that has led to some of the worst foreign affairs and foreign policy in the history of the United States.
Well, Mike, at the end of the day, though, I mean, based on what Scott has just said and also yourself, I mean, the United States is behaving more and more like a rogue regime. We see sanctions, illegal sanctions, being implemented left and right. So we've just seen what has happened to more countries in South America. And of course, what we see is the demonizing of all of these entities by the United States, when it is actually the United States that seems not to abide by international law and goes against the United Nations. So what does this mean? What needs to be done? And why should innocent people have to pay such a heavy price because of Washington's decisions?
Well, I agree. The United States is become a bad global citizen. And it's time to change this. as we're watching via North Korea, via Iran, Russia is coming out and say they're going to help circumvent the sanctions. The sanctions that the U.S. puts on are becoming less and less effective as a function of time. People are discovering workarounds, how to defeat them. Now, what the global community should do is perhaps sanction the United States and stop all trade, stop all commerce, stop buying American products, stop selling products to America, and do this to bring the United States government to its knees so that they would correct their foreign policy mistakes and realize that, that their influence, although it's very great, it is not unlimited. And so the U.S. could be hurt financially, economically, very severely just by boycotting the dollar.
But let me just jump in here with what you just said, Mike.
Transactions.
Let me just jump in with what you just said. I mean, the United States have never played on a level playing field. So what you were saying is if they were to go against the United States or not sell to the United States, we know that the U.S. works in very interesting ways and have a way of trying to punish others, of course, one of the biggest ones dealing with their military in itself. Although we are, it appears, actually, Scott, that there is now a switch to the east, that it is the sun rising in the east and more solidarity coming between these countries. Do you think that perhaps that will be the way to go forward and ultimately break this nonsense that's coming out of Washington?
Well, absolutely. When you look at the formation of BRICS, that was really the initiative that started this initiative. I mean, who would have thought that Turkey and Russia would be allies in this day and age? And also, look at the economies coming out of India, out of China. Certainly, Russia's rebounded from three very tremendous events that were initiated by the West against Russia, and they've rebounded as well. And these countries alone make up nearly 50 to 60% of the world economy. So I think that we're seeing an opportunity where there will be a shift unless the United States does correct its ways, because the United States only makes up 25 to 30% of the world economy. And certainly it is showing its inability to produce by the nature that the other countries are outproducing the United States from a production perspective and manufacturing by tenfold at this point. The United States is producing nothing other than obviously technology and warfare. Now, that being said, you know, obviously when it comes to suffering, certainly nobody's suffering more than Yemen right now. I remember when I was young studying Arabic in Monterey, California, and I was watching the aid programs coming up in 1985, where a billion and a half people watched as the world raised money to help the aid in Africa. I don't see that kind of attitude in the United States anymore. I don't see that kind of attitude in the world. And it's time for that again. It's time for the people to come back and think through their own destruction of this world and correct what the wrongdoings in which have happened over the past three decades. What happened in the 80s and the 90s and the last 15 to 20 years has been a traumatic event for the world. And it's certainly, hopefully, the young people are noticing. And I see a change in the attitudes of many of the Americans that I meet.
Well, Mike, your prognosis of all this with these sanctions, how do you see this? One, affecting Iranian people, and affecting the United States itself and its alliances.
Well, I see the Europeans are going to stick with the JCPOA. They're going to continue to do commerce and transact with Iran. I think the Russians are going to be very supportive with the Iranians and help them circumvent the sanctions. I think the Chinese are also going to be involved, as well as the Indians. And I think that the U.S. has dealt itself a losing hand by trying to kill this deal and to trying to sanction Iran. I think it's time for the U.S. to wake up, realize, all right, we blew it, we made a mistake. It's time for us to rethink this and come up with a new set of solutions on this. Because having a nuclear-armed Iran is not the world's worst thing. They've been very responsible. They haven't created a war with anyone in over 300 years. Very peacefully oriented. The real sore spot on the planet is, again, Israel. And what we're seeing is the Israeli influence and the military-industrial influence over U.S. foreign policy, and both of those need to be curbed.
Okay.
The military-industrial complex can retool and put everything into exploration of space, not into weapons of mass destruction.
And it's Scott, let me turn to Scott. Scott, your final comments. You have 40 seconds.
I think one of the most compelling pictures I saw this past week was the hand-in-hand. You had Putin, you had Merkel, you had the President of France, and also Erdogan, all making an agreement and a treaty for what's happening in Idlib in Syria. I think the shift of global influence is very clear in that picture. The fact that you have two major powers in the European Union basically dealing with Turkey and Russia, that was unheard of. I would have guessed anything like that 30 years ago. So I think the shift is happening. I think the people are beginning to see it. And thankfully, with channels like Press TV and RT and others around the world, they're breaking through the media conglomerates of the United States that are brainwashing the American people into believing things that are absolutely untrue.
All right. And on that note, appreciate both of you being with us right here in the debate. Former American intelligence linguist and commentator Scott Ricard out of Tampa. Editor Veterans Today, Mike Harris out of Phoenix. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzieh Hashemi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. See you next time.